Thursdays every week through the legislative sessions brings us another legislative hotline. And today we feature 7th District State Senator Shelley Short, who's on the line with us this morning live from Olympia, Jason.
Yeah, welcome back, Senator Short.
Thank you so much. Glad to be back.
Yeah, we missed you last time, and we don't want that to happen again, but we know you have stuff you have to do, floor action, and of course in committee. I think you were on a committee last time. That's why you missed us.
I was. I actually had bill hearings up, so those are points of time where it messes with our schedule quite a bit, and I apologize for that.
Okay, well, we'll try to get it done every other week here at 8:05 on Thursdays with you, Shelley Short from the 7th District. Up until the legislature ends, the big 105-day session. So, several things on the plate. There's some drama going on right now, especially in the Senate, with the police pursuit laws that were changed a couple of years back, and trying to re-add that language there to reasonable suspicion from the other way it was that makes the pursuits more difficult for law enforcement to engage in. So, what is going on with that you're noticing?
Well, I'll tell you what, for listeners in your program this morning, the timing couldn't be better to talk about this. So this week is committee cutoff. For the Senate Law and Justice Committee, their cutoff is today. That is their last committee scheduled before tomorrow's cutoff. So we will see whether or not she continues to refuse to pass out of committee Senate Bill 5352, which Senator Lovick said would restore the reasonable suspicion. It's stunning some of the things she has said. Well, we can't do this. We need to study it. That's the bill she's advancing. But the reason she gives it is, it's become so politicized that she doesn't believe the legislature is the best body to make to make changes on this. So I'm like, you got to be kidding. This is what we do every day as legislators, especially during session, is we take these tough issues. She also relied on a study that said that the law, the way they passed it, actually reduced fatalities as a result of police chases. But what we found out is statistically that study was not up to scientific standards. Folks, scientists started coming out of the woodwork talking about that, saying, it's a study, doesn't even have, what they consider to be enough information in it to make those assertions. It's what she's held up to say that she shouldn't pass, John Lovick's bill. But look, it's going to set up a showdown. If it doesn't come out of committee, we're going to be engaged on trying to force to bring it through other committees and onto the floor, and I'll definitely be a part of that.
Yeah, I know you can do that in state legislatures. There's roundabout ways to make stuff happen, not going through the committee. And we're talking about Manka Dhingra, who is the chairperson, Democrat, from the west side of the Law and Justice Committee. And the interesting caveat here is the bill is from a fellow Democrat, John Lovick, that reinstates the language we were talking about, reasonable doubt, from the other language that was more stiff. So that's very interesting. And today's kind of a cutoff point for that. You could probably find a way to get that, and if everything was done correctly, find a way to still get that to the Senate floor.
That's correct. We would have to, right now the challenge is the only what we call vehicle or bill vehicle to potentially get that done is that study bill, which makes it a little bit more difficult because of the titles. But it may be our only vehicle to try and add language into. Certainly, if the bill goes to Ways and Means, the Budget Committee, there may be a chance there. And then, obviously, there are chances on the floor. But, the best chance we always have is to get these bills passed through committee. But there are Democratic members in her caucus that absolutely support, the reasonable suspicion versus the bill that was passed 2 years ago. And so it's really starting to fracture their caucus. And I'm just really hoping that her members will pressure her into enacting this reasonable change.
Okay, going from actually probable cause is the phrase down to reasonable suspicion. Again, that's what there's two phrases like that. And it changes everything as far as how police can handle police chases and pursuits.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, probable cause really sets it up. You have to see it in progress. That's right. Essentially what that does, instead of reasonably, you know, looking at someone who's doing something suspicious and taking it from there. So it's a huge change in standards for sure.
Okay, so let's talk about some other of your priorities. You've got some bills I was just glancing over. We've heard about some of them, had some stories on the air about some of them, the wine bill I think we had. But what else is really on your plate right now?
Well, I have a couple of bills. So I do a lot of work in the land use issue, so around the Growth Management Act. That's local jurisdictions, you know, are mandated to do planning on where they see growth occurring and whether or not they have the infrastructure to meet that growth. But we know that what I describe it as, especially for a lot of our jurisdictions in our district, it's become a square peg in a round hole. And so when you think of how it doesn't work for a smaller city or a smaller county, then it really hampers their ability to provide housing, to provide essential services. And so I have two bills that are actually progressing that change that for the smaller cities in ways that get rid of duplicative planning. And they can take some of the county's work and make their own. And these are things that have been widely supported, I think will definitely help. But look, there's two bills on the other side that actually make it worse. And we're hoping those bills don't advance. And one would create climate change as an element that our local counties and cities would have to plan for. And the other one is environmental justice and making sure that vulnerable populations have appropriate seats at the table. Look, I don't have a problem with that, but the problem is it sets it up as appealable under, so if one person doesn't think that person has had a good seat at the table, then they can appeal it to the Growth Management Hearings Board. And it just becomes something that becomes a big burden for the counties to get beyond. In some instances, it actually prevents them from having funding like through the Public Works Board. That's an important, you know, entity for funding infrastructure. So I just think it doesn't need to do that. It's not going to help housing. It's kind of odd. We pass these good little bills and then they're passing bad big bills.
Yeah, it just seems like there's also a divide, obviously the cascade curtain, but bigger cities and smaller towns and what's needed in each one. It seems like there's a divide there with that.
Well, there is, and I'd like, if you have time, I'd like to give you an example of that. So we have, we've been doing a lot in the housing arena, which we need to. A lot of bills, what I would consider to be tools, maybe tools in an urban environment, tools, maybe in your suburban areas, maybe it's lot splitting, maybe it's, you know, streamlined permits, maybe it's doing some of your more dense development. But there's an issue that we ran into. So a lot of groups that support this planning and the appeal process, they like to think of these changes being appropriate in an urban growth area, but not outside of it. So when you think of our rural areas, they need supportive housing. They need, you know, tools too. They don't want to advance those bills. So we're still working on those. We think there ought to be tools for everyone. Family, regardless of where they choose to live, and stay tuned on whether we're successful with that.
Okay. Also, I've heard you talking about the superintendent of public education, instruction. That doesn't sound like your favorite person right now.
He's not.
Okay. This goes back to, I guess, COVID and, COVID restrictions and coming from a state level into local school districts, et cetera. So go into that for us. And what, do you have a bill here also that relates to that?
I do. Yeah. I do. It's Senate Bill 5029. And what that would do is really restore decision-making back to local school boards. Look, OSPI has an important function, and that is the audit function, ensuring that school districts are spending money appropriately, you know, that there's transparency in that. But beyond that, he should let, or really the position, whoever's there, should, the local school districts should be making those decisions. And we saw that during COVID where he threatened if you weren't abiding by, you know, to the letter of the law, what Inslee had put out in his edicts, they were, you know, there were threats of withholding funding, even basic education, you know, like the per student funding. There were threats of that. There were threats of fines that they instituted from labor and industries. And so it was just really over the top. But look, we elect local school boards to really have that say. They're a reflection of your communities, where your schools are. They're making those decisions. We think that's the most appropriate place for discussion on those, not at OSPI's level. So we would actually constitutionally change his authority.
There's a couple of others. I'm looking at here, the 08 and 09, 5008 and 5009. They're kind of, well, they're the same territory relating to providing parents the legal guardians access to instructional materials, adding a new section to the RCW prescribing penalties. And the other one, of course, is legal guardians and parents approving participation in sex education. So go into those a little bit for us.
So basically, those bills really put parents in the driver's seat, to have the schools coordinate with them, collaborate with them. So parents, we did the same thing with our kids. There may be instructional material we don't think is appropriate. And you as a parent ought to have that choice to opt your students out. But really, those bills are more about saying, hey, you school districts, you should be working with, your parents to determine what does that instructional material look like? What do those classes look like? And how, it's unfortunate, over the years, there's really been a chasm. And not necessarily at the local school district level between school districts and parents, but really the state, kind of putting forth a chasm with the policies that they're passing. For you and I and all of our listeners who are raising families, parents have the ultimate say with what goes on, in their children's lives with respect to education and access to information. So really those bills would restore that.
Okay, devil's advocate here. I do hear from, say, teachers, et cetera, on that side, that giving parents access to instructional material is going to be just throw a wrench in the whole system, and it will be tough to make it work.
Sure. And what I would say is it depends on what the instructional material is. What we've seen over the last many years is it's really become more about social policy than it is about education. You think of bricks and mortar, just the things that our children need to, need and should be learning. I don't think parents have a problem with a lot of that instructional material. It's really the shift that we've seen in more of the areas of social policy that has started influencing instructional material and what our teachers teach. But look, most of the local teachers I talk to, they don't like it either. They think that a lot of this material really, really divides, just parents and maybe some of the community's values, and really makes it harder for them. So I would advocate that these bills actually bring the community together. Look, our schools are, they're centers where our kids learn. They receive so much and support from within the community to support what they're doing, that support network for our schools. So I would actually say it brings it back.
Okay. Just really quickly, what is an example of what's being taught that's inappropriate right now specifically?
Well, I think you look at the sex education curriculum, a lot of people say, they already get that teaching in health, right? But what a lot of listeners don't know is that goes down to the grade school level. Just think about that. Is that appropriate? And just a lot of the curriculum isn't appropriate for those age groups. Look, we've all been in health class. We've all seen, you learn about anatomy, all of that kind of stuff. Not a problem. It's getting into much greater detail. I mean, I don't even know if I could say this online. It's about, sexual pleasure, sex acts, and different things like that. When you really look at, that sounds stunning. I know it does. But it's actually in the instructional material.
Okay. Senator Shelley Short, our 15 minutes of fame here. How about that? We're going to do it every couple of weeks, have our 15 minutes of fame together with you on a Thursday. Hopefully we get to do this every other week for the whole session. So thank you for joining us today here on the Legislative Hotline, Senator.
Thank you so very much. Appreciate it.